All right. Hey, everybody, and happy first full week of everything being back regular, right? Again, not only of the year, but of the entire decade. And, you know, I don't know if you guys are familiar with the fact that I go to this lady and I let her do my nails and she likes to get very creative, et cetera, et cetera. And one thing she hates are regular white French tips because she just thinks they're so boring. But I did talk her into doing some. I told her it represented the freshness, the newness of the new year and the new decade. So I have just some normal French tips. But she actually told me when I left the salon to hide, because she didn't want other people to see that she let me have just regular white French tips. So she's not a fan of it, but they have such a clean, fresh, nice look, don't you think? So, but yeah, she likes to, you know, she's doing artwork. She likes things to go a little more than I usually hold her back a little bit. But during the holidays, as you know, I let her go do whatever she wants. So we had some fun nails for the last 6 weeks. So I am here for Enlightened Leadership with the Tao Te Ching. And I will at least begin with chapter 41. But before I do that, I have a song that I've picked. And I went ahead and picked a Rebecca Folsom song. For those of you who don't know yet, when we go on our New Mexico pilgrimage, we're going to end the New Mexico pilgrimage here in La Vida with a Rebecca Folsom concert, just like we ended this year's fall retreat with a Rebecca Folsom concert. So it'll be fun allowing everybody the opportunity to get to know Rebecca. Those who already don't, I know several of you already do know Rebecca. But this is a song that when she played it, I don't think it's the same song Shauna played the other night, but my mind could just be wrong. But the reason I'm saying that is because when Shauna played a song the other night, afterwards she said, "This song reminds me of the Loving All Method." Well, this song reminds me of the Loving All Method. I think it might be a different song, Shauna. You'll have to let me know if I just forgot and played the same song. But anyway, here we go. Rebecca Folsom. I have the wrong song pulled up. I think maybe when I was going through this, I thought maybe this is the same song. Maybe I shouldn't play it, but I'm going to go ahead and play it now that I did that huge intro. So let me do this again.
Thank you.
I just stopped it too early. It sounded like the end, but I think there was a little more. Was that the same song, Shauna? No, okay, I didn't think so. So she has at least two songs then that remind us of the Loving All Method. Yeah, that's a lot of fun. Okay, good. all right, so as I mentioned, I'm here for the Tao Te Ching. I'll be doing verse 41. I'm going to begin with the Derek Lynn version of the Tao. And this is one of my favorite verses of the Tao, by the way. Higher people hear of the Tao. They diligently practice it. Average people hear of the Tao. They sometimes keep it and sometimes lose it. Lower people hear of the Tao. They laugh loudly at it. If they do not laugh, it would not be the Tao. There is a proverb. Therefore, a proverb has the following. The clear Tao appears unclear. The advancing Tao appears to retreat. The smooth Tao appears uneven. High virtue appears like a valley. Great integrity appears like disgrace. Encompassing virtue appears insufficient. Building virtue appears inactive. True substance appears inconstant. The great square has no corners. The great vessel is late in completion. The great music is imperceptible in sound. The great image has no form. The Tao is hidden and nameless. Yet it is only the Tao that excels in giving and completing everything. Let me just peek at these others and see if they're very different, because that's pretty long. Yeah, there's some minor differences. For example, well, let me just read this one. I don't think I'm going to read all four of them, though, because it's pretty long and we won't get to look at it. But just so you can hear some of the differences, this is the Victor Mayer version, which actually puts this verse at verse 3, because the verses are in a different order, some of them, in Victor Mayer. When the superior man hears the way, he is scarcely able to put it into practice. When the middling man hears the way, he appears now to preserve it, now to lose it. When the inferior man hears the way, he laughs at it loudly. If he did not laugh, it would not be fit to be the way. For this reason, there is a series of epigrams that says, the bright way seems dim, the forward way seems backward, the level way seems bumpy, superior integrity seems like a valley, the greatest whiteness seems grimy, ample integrity seems insufficient, robust integrity seems apathetic. Plain truth seems sullied. The great square has no corners. The great vessel is never completed. The great note sounds muted. The great image has no form. The way is concealed and has no name. Indeed, the way alone is good at the beginning and good at completing. So I mentioned that this is one of my favorite verses. And the reason it's one of my favorite verses is because it states so clearly how the world thinks opposite of the Tao. For example, you know, we have this retreat house, which, you know, we do have an ad on Find the Divine, and we do have it on our website, and we put our retreats on our website. But you know, we don't go out and do this huge marketing campaign in all of the spiritual magazines to let everybody know about this retreat house. Being really, really focused on marketing, on getting the word out, is the way the world thinks. And the way the Tao thinks is you just remain pure in your purpose. And those who are to be attracted then will be attracted. And in fact, one of the things I really valued about Ken Wapnick was Ken Wapnick did not do a great big marketing campaign. I mean, he had a website. And if you went to his website, you would find out what he was offering when. But he was just focused on remaining pure. And I don't know if any of you ever met Ken Wapnick. You know, his teaching kind of came off in one way. You know, when he was teaching, he came off in, I don't know how to say it. I don't know, sometimes even dark, you know, because the course can get kind of dark. And so sometimes his teaching would, you know, following that way of teaching would seem to get kind of dark. You know, like I remember him one time talking about nature. You know, I look outside and I see beauty, and I always have. But he talked, you know, he would look outside and he would talk about how everything's out there trying to kill each other. You know, the weeds are trying to kill other weeds, and the animals are killing other animals, and the insects are killing insects. And he would talk about the world in this very dark way. But when you met him, he was this pure light. This incredibly pure light. And that was at least the only thing that I could see when I met him was the purity of who he was, the purity of the light. And I think that Ken Wapnick lived his entire life from the time he discovered A Course in Miracles. I think Ken Wapnick lived his entire life attempting to be the purity. Right, I didn't live with him, but I still feel that way. I would be surprised if that wasn't true about him. It's not true about a lot of people, but I think it was true about him. And that's really the way of the Tao. The way of the Tao is by doing your little part and being very, very pure and very focused and very genuine on your little part. And whether that little part becomes big, and Kim Wapnick's did become pretty big. You know, when he would offer his monthly retreats, he typically had like 250 people there, right? He had this entire center. So it did become pretty big. But whether it becomes big or not is none of your business. Right? Your business is on being pure. Someone made a suggestion about a change at the retreat house. And when I brought that suggestion to the retreat house subcommittee yesterday, the first thing I said is, one thing I got to say before we look at this is, our job is to weigh the suggestion against the purpose. I said, now the purpose, because that's our job, you know, the purpose of the retreat house, when the guidance came, the purpose of the retreat house was to create an environment where all, that keyword is very important, all, not just awakening together people, where all could come on retreat. And I said, but there's a difference between a retreat house where people can come, they can have silence, maybe they don't want to be exposed to social interactions, right? They're coming here to get away from that. They're coming here to go within. There's a difference between that and a community center. And I said, you know, we've had a couple of recommendations. Somebody suggested a couple months ago that maybe we start having a weekly course group. And now the suggestion was that we open up the weekly gathering to the local community. And I said, when we consider this, we really have to look at how it affects who we are and what our purpose is and what our guidance was. And in fact, we had like a 50-minute discussion, you know, really looking at that before we made a discussion, before we made a decision. In the end, we did decide to open it up for the weekly gathering. And if we find out that was a mistake, then we'll change it. But we decided to open it up. Of course, it will not be open whenever there's a retreat in session. But it will be open up. People can come at 7:15. They can join in the online meditation at 7:30, watch the weekly gathering, and then we'll even have a 30-minute fellowship And then that's it. And people will be asked to enter in silence, and we'll see how it works. But what's really important is when we make these decisions that we are being pure to our guidance. And, you know, lots of people can come up with lots of ideas that they think are really cool, great ideas. But our job is to be pure to the purpose. Right? The same thing goes for the trustees or the board of directors. When the trustees or the board of directors are making decisions about what happens with Awakening Together, none of us would mind more members, none of us would mind more donations, that can't be the driving factor. The driving factor is our purpose, you know, and our purpose for Awakening Together as a whole is that shared purpose and those five core values. So let's say that there was some teacher that really, you know, has a following, and that teacher for some reason liked Awakening Together and wanted to start merging with Awakening Together and you know, bringing all of his or her people into Awakening Together, and it looked like business could be booming. But that teacher's teachings weren't really aligned with our core values. You know, and we're choosing between booming business or being pure. Our job would be to choose the purity. Right? And that's really what this is talking about. When it says all of these strange things, like the bright way seems dim, right? It's talking about, you know, other people who are thinking like the world might say, why are you saying no to him? Oh my gosh, do you realize he would bring hundreds of people to Awakening Together? Blah, blah, you know, right? You know, other people might be thinking in that way. And it's our job to be pure, to remember our purpose, and to make all decisions based on that. In fact, that's even in our Constitution. It's in our Constitution that the trustees will make decisions based on the purpose and the core values, and that the board of directors, their job is to make sure the trustees are making decisions based on the purpose and the core values. I'm just grabbing Stephen Mitchell here. I'll begin at the top. Stephen Mitchell says, when a superior man hears of the Tao, he immediately begins to embody it. Now, a superior man would be someone with great clarity. Someone who understood the ultimate wisdom in remaining pure to your purpose. Right? And so the superior man hears of the Tao, hears of the teaching of the Tao, immediately sees the genuine value in that and begins to live it, begins to embody it. It says, when an average man hears of the Tao, he half believes it, half doubts it. So what the average man would do is he would probably follow the Tao when it suited him. And then he would return to the ways of the world when it really became push against shove for his values. So for example, he might be willing to follow the Tao and allow what other people perceive as problems, but he sees them as minor. And just allow those things to be as they are without pushing the pendulum. But then when something comes up that he perceives as a big problem, maybe something like running out of money or something like his reputation being smeared on social media, at that point, because he perceives that as important, then he forgets about the Tao and he returns to the ways of the world. So that's the average man. When an average man hears of the Tao, he half believes it, half doubts it. And then when a foolish man hears of the Tao, he laughs out loud. Like the foolish man, you know, to heck with this, quote, being pure to purpose stuff. We got to make money. You know, that's what we're here for. You know, we got to make money. We got to increase membership, you know. and just completely throws out the idea of being pure to the purpose. So when a foolish man hears of the Tao, he laughs out loud. And then it says, interestingly, if he didn't laugh, it wouldn't be the Tao. You know, when we study A Course in Miracles, somewhere in A Course in Miracles, it talks about how the world is upside down. And that, of course, is in, you know, that's a symbol, but that's in comparison to the truth, right? The world is upside down. So we would say again that the Tao is upside down from the world's thinking. The truth is upside down from illusion. So the fact that it is completely opposite of the way the world thinks proves that it has a different source. You know, in Revolver, the ego is called Mr. Gold. And they say that this is Gold's world, right? This is Gold's game. So it's the ego's world. It's the ego's game. So if the truth were like the ego, if the truth were like the way the world thinks, then that would mean that the ego is the truth. So it really, if you look at it, it makes sense that the ways of the truth are completely different than the ways of the world. And anyone who fully believes in the ways of the world are going to laugh at the ways of the truth because they're going to sound ridiculous. You know, like, well, let's talk about the person who is my benefactor, the person who pays my salary. For those of you who don't know, it's one person, and it's been one person for many, many years now, for more than 10 years now. But when this person first received the guidance, the way the guidance came in was to tithe. And literal tithe. I mean, sometimes people use the word tithe just to represent a donation, but tithe has a more specific meaning. Tithe means 10% of your income before the taxes are taken out. So like if you make $100,000 a year before the taxes are taken out, then you would tithe $10,000. Right, that's the literal definition of tithe. So this person received guidance to tithe for my salary, to tithe to me. But interestingly, this person had just started a brand new business and only had about 3 or 4 customers. And this person had been guided to start this business and not advertise, just hang up a sign, right? Just hang up a sign. And then received this guidance to tithe to me. And she says that when she was writing that very first check, which the very first check was only $300 or $400, because again, she only had 3 or 4 customers. She wasn't making big money. She says she was shaking with fear. You know, she just didn't feel like she could give away $300 or $400. Here she was, you know, her whole, everything was on the line. I mean, she could fail. She could lose everything, right? But because she was guided to do so, she wrote that check anyway. Interestingly, actually, I forgot an important detail of the story. And this is a very important detail. She had 3 or 4 customers. She committed to tithe. She sent me an email saying that was her guidance. Then she lost all of her customers. So when she sat down to write that check, she had 0 customers. She had had them for the last month, so she had made an income, right? So she was tithing from that income when she did have 3 or 4 customers. But now, while she was physically writing the check, she had 0 customers. And what I really love about her story is the faith it took for her to write that check and mail it anyway. And you can see how she was following the way of the Tao. She followed the guidance to start this new business. She followed the guidance not to advertise, just hang out a sign. And she followed the guidance to tithe. And she followed through on that guidance even when she lost the few customers that she had. And you can see why the foolish man would laugh out loud at her. What are you doing, woman? You know, who's this Regina person to you? You know, you need that money. You have bills to pay. You have a home. You have a car. You know, you now have this business, this rental fee here. You know, you have new expenses. You can't be sending money to her, right? But she did it anyway. And of course, the rest of the story, as Paul Harvey used to say, is that her business grew very well. And she continues to send that money every year. And that is my sole support. You know, the rest of the donations that come into Awakening Together support our other employees and support, you know, just the business of running Awakening Together. There's a lot of expense. Like even Zoom alone is $2,000 a year. You know, it costs money to provide these audio files that we provide for free. I mean, I go over all that when I go over the budget. I can't even sit here and hold on to all of our expenses in my head. I can't go down it. But we have a lot of expenses, and the other donations pay for those. But Awakening Together has never had to pay my salary because of this one person who chose to trust this ridiculous guidance, ridiculous in the eyes of the world, and follow the guidance. To me, that's what this verse is all about. You know, this woman must have been a superior man, right? When a superior man hears of the Tao, he immediately begins to embody it. That's what she did. When an average man hears of the Tao, he half believes it, half doubts it, follows it when it suits him, and doesn't follow it when it doesn't, because when the rubber hits the road, you know, he's got to take that control again. And of course, when a foolish man hears of the Tao, he laughs out loud. That's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard of. That is just not the way the world works. And we agree. That's not the way the world works. That's the way the truth works. If he didn't laugh out loud, it wouldn't be the Tao. And then Stephen Mitchell says, thus it is said, the path into the light seems dark. The path forward seems to go back. The direct path seems long. True power seems weak. True purity seems tarnished. True steadfastness seems changeable. True clarity seems obscure. The greatest art seems unsophisticated. The greatest love seems indifferent. The greatest wisdom seems childish. The Tao is nowhere to be found, yet it nourishes and completes all things. And I've now kind of read from three different translations. And although the pattern of this second part of verse 41, where Stephen Mitchell says the path into the light seems dark, the pattern is the same in all three, but the exact descriptors used is different. Let's see, the very first one, looking at only it, the path into the light seems dark. That's Stephen Mitchell. Oh, well, actually, this one's very similar. The bright way seems dim. That is Victor Mayer. The clear Tao appears unclear. And then we haven't even looked at Wayne Dyer yet. He says, the way of illumination seems dark. So on the first line, they're similar. But as you go further down, the descriptors they're using are more different. But that pattern is the same. And the pattern kind of says that the way of the Tao, if you're looking at it with the glasses of the world, seems mistaken. It seems like the wrong way. And in fact, if we take this very first line, the path in light seems dark. And you all are very familiar with this because you're a part of Awakening Together, and we share this teaching all of the time. But a part of that path into the light is what we call purification. And purification gets very, very dark. In fact, I was talking to someone yesterday. I was listening, so I didn't comment on this when she said it. But one of the things she said when she was sharing with me was that, you know, something like she'll feel like she's making progress, and then she falls back. That's actually the way. You know, I didn't have the opportunity to tell her that means you're doing it. But that's actually the way. That's why Jesus says we don't know our retreats from our advances, right? When it starts getting dark, when it starts getting ugly, when all that starts coming up, that actually means we're doing it. We're looking at it. We're allowing it. We're learning from it. We're no longer quickly repressing it and hiding it from ourselves. You know, the average person in the world hides as much darkness as they can within themselves so they don't have to look at it. The way of the Tao is to allow that darkness to come up, which means if you're on the journey to the light, your life most likely, I don't know if there's any exceptions, but you know, since I don't know everybody's story, I won't say it's 100% this way. But your journey, your life is going to get darker than it was before. You know, the fear that came up for me when I started the spiritual path was 100 times more intense than anything I felt before. The you know, when I looked at the self-hatred that had been repressed inside my subconscious, it was shocking. I had no idea. I mean, I knew I felt less than other people. Right? I knew that. That was on the surface. I knew that I thought other people were better than me. But I had no idea how deep my self-hatred went. I had no idea how much I despised myself and how worthless I really thought I was. So all of this, of course, has to come up and be released, has to be seen through, has to be disbelieved, right? And so that means that when you're on the spiritual path, there's an awful lot of darkness that comes up. Now, what also happens when we're on the spiritual path, I mentioned that it could feel like you make progress and then you fall back. But what also happens on the spiritual path is we do make progress. You know, like maybe one thing that I've let go of is my desire to defend myself. Maybe I've genuinely let that go to the degree that when someone comes up and they heavily criticize me, you're like, I'm totally fine. Like that's completely let go, the desire to defend myself. I'm able to listen to their criticism. I'm able to take what I think has merit, let go the rest. I'm completely at peace. This feels good. I mean, this feels way better than all the times before when someone criticized me and my walls went up and, you know, and all of that, right? So it feels good. It feels like I made progress. I did make progress. But there's something else down in there I haven't let go of yet, right? And that has to come up too. So what happens is after letting go of my desire to defend, I feel this joy, this peace, everything's brighter. I can listen to criticism and there's no pain in that anymore. But then the next thing comes up. And that next thing that comes up from healing, the mind comes back. It starts feeling heavy again. And I say to myself, I've slipped backwards. But it's not true. I'm moving forwards into the next healing. You see? So, and Jesus tells us this in the Course, right? That you have to walk through the darkness to the light. But when a lot of people start the spiritual path, what they want, and I remember when I was with Michael Langford at his house, he was even kind of making fun of this. Peace, love. He was making fun of it. Peace, love. Not that at the end it isn't peace, love. But that's not what the path is. And if that's what you want immediately and only from the spiritual path, you're not going anywhere. You're just going to develop a spiritual ego where you get to start dressing in spiritual clothes, maybe wearing beads, starting to look a little bit like a hippie again. But you're not going anywhere because the path isn't peace, love. right? The path is through the darkness to the light. So the path into the light seems dark. Oh, and this next line I've already explained. The path forward seems to go back. Right? I've already explained that. You know, one thing came up, you did the work to release it, everything feels great, it's bright, life is easier, right? But then the next thing comes up. And what happens, and this is the mistake that we make, is that when we do release a false belief, and it does get lighter and easier and we're happier, what a lot of people do, I've heard this so many times, is they kind of share that as if they've made it somewhere. You know, like, oh, I'm done. You know, I used to do blah, blah, blah. Now I'm over that. And again, they may be done with a little piece of what has to be undone, but there's other pieces back there waiting to come up. So because they took this lightness too seriously, then when the next bit of darkness comes up, which is moving forward on the spiritual path, that's movement forward through the next little tunnel of darkness towards the light. But when it comes up, they judge themselves as failures because they gave themselves too much credit for the peace while it was here. The peace. You know, again, peace pilgrim, and I think one reason I didn't have this same problem is because the very first spiritual book I ever read cover to cover was Peace Pilgrim. And I think that really saved me because there's so much wisdom in that little book in such a simple, easy to understand way. And she talked about the spiritual path on it, and she talked about it as a series of hills and valleys, with each hill being higher than the hill before, but always coming back down to the valley. And she talked about how the valley is where you learn your lessons. I would say the valley is where we let go of another false belief, right? So when you first begin the spiritual path, I'm going to try and do this for those of you who can see as level as I can, even though I don't have a flip chart. When you first come on the spiritual path, you're about here. You have some kind of a upset with the ego. You successfully move through it, which means you let go of the false belief. And you have this little hilltop where you feel that you feel the effects of that release. But then the next false belief comes up. You go back to the level you were at before. You have your next little engagement with the ego where you're inquiring and looking at what it is and you let it go. The next hilltop is now caused by two releases. It's a little higher. Then you come back to the valley. Your next round with the ego, you see something else, you let it go. You've now got three releases, you go higher. So what happens, and by the way, you're moving forward the whole time, but what happens is each hilltop gets higher and higher because really more and more has been released, but you come back down to that original level to do your next work, which also means the, you know, what feels like the fall feels further. You're just coming down to the same level you were at when you started. That's where you were every day when you started. But because the hilltops are getting higher, you feel like you're coming further down. And this is why you feel like you're backsliding or you feel like you're failing. But what you really do is moving forward. And this is why Jesus says you don't know your retreats from your advances. Your advances are those, quote, falls. They're not really falls at all. They're advances. You think if you can just hang on to peace, hang on to happiness, that's an advance. But actually, if you hang on to peace, if you hang on to advance to happiness, when it's time for you to face your next lesson, you're delaying yourself. And you have to practice denial to do that. You have to go right back to denying everything, right back to repressing everything, right back to projecting everything. If you're going to do this in a very pure way, if you're going to stay pure to your purpose, which in this stage is healing the mind, right? Healing yourself of all of the false beliefs and burdensome attachments, et cetera, you do not want to return to projection and denial and repression in order to hold on to peace and love. You actually want to allow that fall because you want your next lesson, because that's moving forward. You see? No car wrecks allowed. No car wrecks allowed. You think they're listening? Hey, Reggie. So let's see, I think I had Stephen Mitchell. Let's go back to him. So the path into the light seems dark. The path forward seems to go back. The direct path seems long. You know, again, I tell you guys that I went through primarily a 5-year purification period. Doesn't mean that purification doesn't continue, but it's not at all the same as it was for that 5 years. You know, that was very intense, you know, just going from one thing to another to another. And when I was in that 5 years, it felt like it was going to take forever. It felt like I would never transcend the I am bad belief. It felt like I would never transcend judgment. It felt like I would never transcend fear. I mean, just never. I kept doing the work, but the feeling at the time was this is going to take forever. The funny thing is, when I look back on it, it seems like it was a very short time. In fact, I feel confident that it was a very short time. I think that to move through all of that letting go in 5 years is really amazing, really fast. But it didn't feel that way when I was in it, right? So that's what this means when it says the direct path seems long, right? I was really moving forward at a very good clip. You know, I was focused on my work, doing my work, not taking breaks from my work, and moving forward at a very fast clip. But that's not how it felt. So that's important to know, too. It's important to know that when you're going through this, you can't trust your own assessment of how long it's taking you. You just can't. You just have to keep doing the work. As long as the work is there to be done, you just keep doing the work. True power seems weak. For example, one of the things that you will have to let go of if you haven't yet is the desire to defend. That's something everybody's going to face. When I say let go of the desire to defend, that means that you need to get to the point where you can allow people to walk right up to you, look you right in the face, accuse you of something you did not do, and be okay with it, and not need to convince them that you did it. And I'll tell you, it happens all the time. I mean, you know, not in a strong way like Jesus faced it, but, you know, we were sitting right here a couple weeks ago, and my mom said to Jasmine something that is not true, but mom doesn't know it's not true. She said to Jasmine, she said, your mother still worries about you. And then she went on to tell her a story about a time recently when I was worried. And it was funny because I wasn't worried. I probably just was reporting to mom what Jasmine had told me. I wasn't worried. But you know, my mom, through the filter of her mind, I guess that would have worried her if she was the mom, right? So she perceived me as worried and she told Jasmine. And I just let it be. I never said to her, no, mom, I wasn't worried. If mom wants to see me as worried, that's fine. That's what I mean by letting go of defense. Because what in me would have said, no, mom, I wasn't worried. I'm totally okay with it, right? That would be wanting to project an image. Project an image. I want you to see me as not worried. And anytime we want to project an image, we're clinging to the ego, right? So at some point, everyone has to learn exactly what Jesus learned. Now, Jesus learned it in a very extreme way. He was falsely accused and then beaten and crucified, right? Very extreme. But every one of us, in much more minor ways, are falsely accused frequently. It can happen a lot. And at some point, we need to learn to just allow the other person to see us the way they want to see us. You know, if you want to see me as angry, see me as angry. If you want to see me as worried, see me as worried. If you want to see me as dishonest, see me as dishonest. If you want to see me as manipulating, see me as manipulating. Without me trying to project an image. So again, true power seems weak. Because in the world, thinking like the world, to stand there and smile and allow somebody to be wrong about you seems weak. But it's actually true power. You no longer need people to see you in a certain way. You no longer need to project an image. So true power seems weak. Next he says, true purity seems tarnished. And I don't know if I have exact clarity on that, like to tell a story or anything. I mean, what does come to mind is that the way of the truth is always different from the way of the world. So for example, you know, I was saying earlier that let's imagine, I got a good, thank you. An example was just given. So let's imagine that, that some well-known teacher was impressed with Awakening Together and wanted to join with Awakening Together. And what he would be bringing to Awakening Together is all of his teachings, all of his followers, and Awakening Together would become this fairly big organization, fairly well-known organization. It would push us forward in the worldly spiritual world, right? But again, the challenge is that this particular teacher, some of what he teaches is not aligned with our values. As I mentioned earlier, our job is to be pure. And so let's imagine that the trustees who are making this decision about whether we're going to merge with this other person and create one organization, you know, they're doing this with their conscience. They're being very pure. And they understand, you know, we're passing up a lot of money, a lot of members, a lot of visibility, but that's just not who we are. I mean, we can't do that. Well, to somebody, that may seem tarnished. Like people may imagine, like if I'm the president minister at the time, people may imagine Regina just didn't want to lose her slot as the first teacher. She was afraid this guy would outshine her, right? Right? Isn't that the way people think? I mean, why else would she do this? You know, I mean, this is a chance for us to make more money, for us to be more visible, to get more members. She must have had an ulterior motive. So true purity seems tarnished because people can't fathom, they can't understand true purity. So they imagine a hidden agenda. They imagine you must have done it for some other reason, right? True steadfastness seems changeable. There's kind of one rule that you can always count on. And this is steadfastness, by the way, is following this one rule all the time. And that one rule is to follow your spiritual intuition, follow guidance. But the outer appearance of what that looks like may not appear consistent to others. In fact, I've told this story before, so I'll tell it briefly, but you know, my guidance has been, ever since I've been on this spiritual path, to treat everyone else with kindness. I've never had, well, except for this one time, which I'm gonna talk about in a minute. I've never had an exception to that guidance. Treat everyone with kindness, just always. no matter what they say or do to me. And it doesn't matter. And trust me, there are people who have pushed the envelope on that and they still get treated with kindness in return. But there was that one time when that person contacted me, who ended up being a stalker eventually. And when that person contacted me, my guidance was not to respond. That was the immediate guidance. But instead of following that immediate guidance, I remembered the usual guidance, which is to be kind to everyone. And I thought, you know, I would respond to anybody else who wrote to me, so I need to respond to him too. And I wrote back. I was being consistent in behavior, but I was not being consistent in following guidance. If I had been consistent in following guidance, my behavior would have appeared inconsistent. This was the one time that I would not have responded to somebody with a kind email. Oh, no, I wasn't going to talk about that. But now that you brought it up, I'll do it in a different way. There was another time. Yeah. There was a time also when a particular person would every now and then get angry at me. And actually, you know, anybody who knows me well knows I don't personally get offended when somebody gets angry at me. But, you know, it's not necessarily helpful all the time to just let someone get angry at you. It's not helpful to them, right? It's not helpful to them. So there was someone who got very angry at me one day, and inside I knew I had to show her what that looked like and felt like, you know, other people. And so I took on that image, and I got, you know, what looked mean and what looked ugly for a period of time, and then I stepped back out of it and we talked about it. But in that moment, I knew that I had to do that. There was no doubt in my mind that I could not allow this person to continue to be that way with other people, that she needed to see what it felt like for other people. All right? So that was another time when my behavior was inconsistent, but my following my guidance was consistent. If I had had this rule, oh no, I always have to look sweet and nice, it may not have been beneficial to that other person in that moment, right? So that's what this means. True steadfastness seems changeable. The true steadfastness is always following my guidance. But sometimes the outer appearance then may not seem to always follow the same rules. When I was in the corporate world, one of the leadership programs that I taught was called situational leadership. Listen to those words, situational leadership. What that meant was you can't treat all people the same all the time. In order to get the best results out of different people and different situations, sometimes you as a leader have to be different, right? You have to look at the situation. And of course, this was teaching tools for figuring it out for yourself. But the idea was you have to look at the situation and you as the leader have to be the best you need to be in this situation. So maybe in one situation, you're firm. Maybe in another situation, you're very soft and very back office. Maybe in one situation, you're in there telling the employee what to do every step of the way. In another situation, you're just completely out of it, trusting the employee. You know, it's situational leadership. But what's consistent is that you're always trying to get the best out of every employee. That's what's consistent. So again, that's the same kind of thing. In fact, situational leadership was based on the Tao. I think I may have told you guys that before. It was based on the Tao. The people who wrote situational leadership studied the Tao. Non-spiritual, of course, but same ideas, right? So that's what this is talking about. True steadfastness seems changeable. My outer behavior may not always be the same, but my inner, where I'm following, is always the same. The next one is true clarity seems obscure. So, you know, true clarity can be honest. I talked about this last night. True clarity can seem downright stupid, to be honest, in the world. Because true clarity is happiness. And to the world, this isn't always a situation for happiness. You shouldn't be happy right now, right? In fact, one of the things I have learned to do sometimes, not 100% of the time, is I have learned to not show my happiness on the outside in certain circumstances because it would be misunderstood. And both Jasmine and Jacqueline, both of them, both of my J's, have said to me before, why are you laughing at me? I'm like, I'm not laughing at you. You know, that's just the happiness coming out right now. I apologize. You know, I'll try to reel it back in, you know, but it can appear out of place, right? It can appear out of place to other people sometimes. So yeah, true clarity, seems obscure. And I hear my mama's clock going off, which means that I am supposed to stop right now. So I am going to let go of the mic, and we'll call it done for verse 41. And I want to thank you guys for hanging out with me. Bye. Oh, and Jacqueline, I'm going to be going for a walk during your teaching since I am coming over after. Okay? Bye.